former office as her own. It had not changed much physically. The pictures on the walls were still mostly photographs of rocket launches and space facilities that Randolph had built. Kate had replaced one especially pointless engineering sketch with a print of colorful flowers in a vase. She kept a small photograph of her sister and herself in the top desk drawer, where no one could see it. It had been taken when they were teenagers, arms around each other's waists, smiles full of milk-white teeth, no marks of pain or disappointment or responsibility on either of their happy, pretty faces. "He's not dead," she was saying to Gaetano. "I'm certain of that, Rafe." It took 2.5 seconds for her words to reach Earth and his response to return. She was smoothing her hair when he replied, "How can you be so sure? He hasn't shown up for 3 weeks. He can't live out in the open that long." "He's not out on the surface," Kate said firmly. "He's somewhere here, around Alphonsus, using an assumed identity." Gaetano seemed annoyed by the transmission lag. He glowered into the screen. "You're guessing," he said at last. Kate shook her head. "Nobody's found his body. But I found something that's maybe more interesting than his corpse." She stopped, smiling, knowing that he would be impatient to hear what she had to say. "So, what is it?" "People are living in the emergency shelters that are scattered around up on the surface. People who aren't registered on the personnel files of any corporation up here."
Gaetano's frown deepened even further when her words reached him. "People? What people?"
Kate waved an uncertain hand.
"The lunar version of the homeless, Rafe. People who have no IDs, no jobs, no permanent abode. I'm digging into this. There's apparently an entire underground community here at Alphonsus. I'll bet the same situation holds at all the other lunar facilities as well."
"I thought everybody lives underground up there."
"I mean underground like, well, like crooks. Black market. Illegal aliens, sort of. They must be criminals, Rafe. They can't hold down regular jobs or they'd be on the personnel files and have regular living quarters assigned to them."
His scowl turned thoughtful.
"You mean there's a whole nest of illegals at Alphonsus?"
"Yes. And Copernicus and the other communities, too. Just like any city on Earth, Rafe."
"And you think Randolph is in with these bums?"
"He must be."
Gaetano ran a finger across his mustache.
"Then you'd better find him. Don't even think about coming back until you do."
Kate tried to look upset at the thought that she was not to return to Earth until she had rooted Dan Randolph out of his hiding place. She kept herself from smiling until several seconds after the phone link had been ended. 22. Randolph Jones, Dan's assumed persona, was a lowly computer programmer in Astro Corporation's logistics department. In other words, a high-tech clerk. The actual Randolph Jones was enjoying 2 days of fun and games with some of the women that Big George played with over in the mining facility out on the plain of Mare Nubium. Horny though he might be, Dan had not been able to bring himself to bed one of Big George's playmates. "No wonder the company's group insurance rates keep going up," he thought the first time George had taken him out to the camp. They looked sleazy and dirty, not at all the kind that Dan felt comfortable with, even after several rounds of locally brewed rocket juice. One of the whores had plunked herself on Dan's knee and whispered into his ear,
"Even if you're too old to cut the mustard, honey, you can still lick the jar."
Then she shrieked with wicked laughter. For the rest of that evening, Dan was glad that his beard was coming in gray. Now, after an hour's walk through the Yamagata Hotel shops, ogling jeweled baubles and pricey clothes and handsome women that he could no longer afford, Dan headed for work as Randolph Jones at Astro Manufacturing's logistics office. The women bothered him. It was fine to feel free of responsibilities, to live from day to day almost like a teenager, no worries, no cares, but no women either. "I've got to do something about that," he told himself. Astro's logistics office was 2 levels below the main plaza, connected to the big enclosed garage where the surface skimmers and tractors were housed and maintained. The personnel computer accepted R. Jones's ID badge without a quiver, simply checking the retinal pattern coded into the badge against Dan's eyes.
It was not programmed to check the pattern on the badge against R. Jones's pattern in the personnel file. Dan realized that this was a hole in Astro's security procedures that you could drive a tractor through. But who would have thought that the company needed tight security procedures at a lunar base? Besides, every piece of equipment and item of supplies was constantly monitored by the logistics computer, wasn't it? The past 3 weeks had taught Dan how fallacious that assumption was.
"Hey, man, you're not Randy Jones."
Dan clipped his badge back onto his pocket as he surveyed the man accosting him. He was another maintenance tech, a black American somewhere in his early 30s, tall and gangly in blue coveralls that were just as faded as Dan's own. His face looked more curious than suspicious. "Randy's taking a couple of days off. He asked me to fill in for him so he wouldn't lose any pay."
"Yeah?"
Dan sidled closer and lowered his voice.
"He's with a couple of girlfriends."
The black man huffed.
"Sounds like him. Trying to live up to his name."
Glancing at the man's ID badge, Dan said, "Listen, Bob, you're not going to give me away, are you? Randy and I are splitting the pay, and I sure could use the money." Robert Thomas obviously did not like the situation, but he said, "I won't give Randy away. He's a friend. A screwball, but a friend. Just don't you fuck up on the job, man. Then we'll all be in the soup. You know anything about tractor maintenance?"
Dan said, "Randy told me his job was running the inventory program."
Thomas smiled.
"Okay, I guess you really do know the old mother humper. Yeah, you handle the inventory while the rest of us do the real work."
Letting out a breath that he had not realized he had been holding in, Dan followed Bob Thomas up the power ladder to the big, echoing garage where the tractors and skimmers were kept. Men and women were already at work, welding sparks sputtering, the clang of metal on metal ringing across the concrete floor of the domed chamber.
"I'll see you at lunch break," Thomas said to Dan. Then he headed for his workstation across the wide floor.
"He's going to be a problem," Dan told himself as he swung onto the power ladder that carried him up to the cubbyhole office on the catwalk overhead where the logistics computer was housed. Jeff Robertson leaned back in his squeaky old desk chair and smiled politely at his two visitors. His desk was cluttered with memorabilia, a small forest of framed photographs of family and old friends, a massive silver-plated drill bit from his first oil well that took up one whole side of the desktop, several model airplanes, and a miniature mock-up of a fusion power reactor that looked almost puny next to the drill bit. Through the window behind Robertson's desk, Jane Scanwell looked out at the soaring glass and steel towers of Houston. But the allegedly blue Texas sky was lost in a gray haze of smog.
"I can see your problem," Robertson said, his voice a thin tenor, "but I don't understand why you're bringing it to me."
To Raffaello Gaetano, sitting beside Jane in front of the desk, Robertson looked like a canny old cowboy, or perhaps the flinty sheriff of some frontier western town, hard-bitten and quick on the trigger. The old man was whipcord lean, his face like tanned leather stretched over an ancient skull, a strong eagle's nose jutting out from it, his hair white and wispy. His eyes bulged, hyperthyroid almost, but they were bright blue and keen as a prairie scout's. Robertson was wearing a comfortable old shirt of sagebrush lavender with a string tie hanging loosely from its collar. Gaetano had refused to take off his dark suit jacket, even though Robertson had remarked that the office might be a bit warm for them. To Jane, in a tailored silk blouse of cream white and a knee-length navy blue skirt, the room felt almost frigid. Texans and their air conditioning. Her years in Europe had made her forget how profligate her fellow Texans could be.
"You are the chief executive officer of the world's largest energy corporation," Gaetano answered smoothly. "Who else would the council turn to except you?"
"Ah, hell," Robertson said. "I'm just an old man who got kicked upstairs."
His smile belied his words. His voice did quaver slightly, and Gaetano knew that this man had spent nearly 7 decades in building Southwest Energy Corporation into the multinational giant it now was. Jane said,
"I don't think anybody could ever get away with kicking you anywhere, Jeff."
Robertson's smile flashed wider.